There's a physical toll taken by round after round of playoff. I think one of the differentiation points of the Southeastern Conference and a number of the autonomy conferences is the physical toll that's experienced in these highly competitive, highly intense games against top-level programs. And I want to be sensitive before we just start adding games that there'd be a full conversation. I think all of that combines to say four is the right point for us. From a bigger picture perspective, I think there are some limitations that keep us focused on four. So I think the answer is that we are focused on four. I don't know that anybody's ever said never, ever, but certainly it's not been a discussion topic, and I don't foresee this year being a motivation for change unless a lot of people alter their perspectives.
Yeah, I'd be all for 18. You know, I'm an Ohio school coach and kind of like the idea of quarterfinals, semifinals, and give more teams, you know, opportunities. And, you know, they'd have to kind of restructure some things with the number of games and the bowl games. But I think you see it, you know, every year that there's more focus just on the four playoff teams, and then the rest of the bowls I don't think are quite what they once was. And so I think we really got to take a hard look at this thing moving forward, and I'd be all for the 18.
When you've got the top pick in the draft that Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen have declared for, that Josh Allen's going to be in, that Baker Mayfield's going to be in, I don't care if you're Cleveland, you got 1-4. I had someone suggesting the other day, oh, here's what Cleveland should do. They should go Saquon Barkley at 1 and then come back at 4 and go get Baker Mayfield or the quarterback they like there. And I said, that would be, in my mind, ridiculous. I think this franchise has shown long enough over time that it shouldn't get cute on quarterbacks. And if one of these guys, Darnold or Rosen, is the guy that John Dorsey recognizes that he likes atop the draft, time to turn in the card.
His coaching style is not for everybody, as we can say safely. You know, it's a coaching style that's based on fear and negativity. It's a pressured atmosphere. And, you know, I think Tom has transitioned to where he appreciates positive thinking and positive motivation more than a lot of people. He's been very vocal about that. You know, he's been doing this for a long time. He's been eating this crud for a long time. And he's like, come on, seriously? Like, still, I have to listen to this? And I think that's what he's explained to people, is that, like, you know, I've done all this stuff, we've made all this beautiful music together, and still I'm kind of getting jumped on here. Alex Guerrero has been an issue in the building for a long time. I think that he became a bigger issue this fall when he and Brady were promoting the TB12 Method book. I think that players in the building, there was an unspoken pressure and tension about where they should train. Did they sort of join the clique and get in with Tom and go to TB12 and risk alienating Belichick? Or do they stay with the Patriots trainers and risk alienating Tom?
You would look toward the future of the organization, and you're going towards a coach. Because I think Mr. Kraft also can look down the line and see Tom's not going to play. He wants 45. I've even talked to Tom. I'm like, 45, man, are you sure? He thinks, yes, it's going to be 45, Teddy B. But I'm like, come on, I'll give you 42. Further on the point, would Mr. Kraft ever take it upon himself to say, I've chosen upon these two quarterbacks, I'm going with Brady? That's never had a situation when I was there. We were never put in a situation like that. Tom was in his heyday back then, so that would be news to me also.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, it is the extravaganza as we get rolling on this Friday afternoon that we like to call Free For All Friday right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. It's 12 minutes after 3 o'clock. Thanks for being with us. We'll take you until 5 and get you through the last part of your workday. If you are done in 48 minutes from now, good for you. If you got an hour and 48 to go, we'll try to fill them for you with the best conversation that we can on all of the big news items of the day. A couple of guests coming up in about, 20 minutes, 25 minutes, we'll call it. We're going to have a conversation with Alex Shane, PatsPulpit.com. That's a website devoted to the, I'm going to call them the Boston Patriots, the New England Patriots.
Ooh, going to AFL days there.
I don't know what happened there. If maybe I was just thinking Celtics for a second, you know, with the, you know, the Cavaliers and Celtics the other night, and Cavaliers still chasing the Celtics, by the way, in the Eastern Conference standings. No, but anyway, the New England Patriots, obviously, it's been the number one story across the sports world over the course of the last 12, 15 hours, whatever it's been. I guess this thing was posted late last night, and most people woke up to it this morning. ESPN writer Seth Wickersham, senior writer for ESPN, the magazine, putting together a piece which is panicking the Patriots Nation. And I got to tell you, ordinarily I would be cheering this from the rooftops. Anything that makes the Patriots Nation nervous and scared and whatever else you want to call it, about the potential death of their dynasty, I would be cheering. And I still may by the time this is all said and done, but my question is, and the reason I'm a little bit hesitant on this, I guess, is I don't know how much of it is accurate. I don't know how much of it is true. The Patriots are, of course, in full denial mode, saying none of these rifts exist. The stuff about Alex Guerrero, the TB12 guru, the stuff about Jimmy Garoppolo being forced, the trade of Jimmy Garoppolo being forced on Bill Belichick by Bob Kraft, who's loyal to Brady and to no one else. I mean, all of this stuff is really soap operatic. Yes, I did. I don't know if that's an actual word or not, but I just made it one. Soap operatic, or very soap opera-ish. No, I'm going to stick with operatic because it sounds better. So how about soap operational? Ooh, I'm good. Anyway, it does seem like a soap opera, doesn't it? I just don't know how much of that is actually accurate. Patriots in full denial mode, as mentioned, and we'll get into the details of the story, obviously, with our guest coming up after the bottom of the hour. Again, Alex Shane is his name from patspulpit.com. And then at 4:40, the other guest, by the way, is Bill Clark, as it is another high school basketball Friday night. First one of the calendar year, obviously, and we'll get a little preview of some of the big matchups tonight. Doesn't Central Catholic play Whitmer tonight?
Indeed they do.
Yeah, that'll be fun after the football shenanigans between those two schools. Really, really great seasons for both, and Whitmer, of course, doing the damage. So basketball, and both are having really good starts to their basketball season, too. Anyway, that's going on at about 4:40 or so this afternoon. So the Patriots' stance on all of this, if you have not yet read, by the way, we've tweeted it. It's all over the sports pages. If you have not read the article by Seth Wickersham, for Kraft, Brady, and Belichick, is this the beginning of the end? That's the headline. It's a very, very, very long article. Of course, I will not read it to you. I will bring some of the meat of it up in the course of this conversation, but I want to share with you what the Patriots' response to this really national firestorm in the sports world, obviously. This isn't carrying as much weight as, North Korea and, social and political issues, but from the sports world's perspective, this is a national firestorm right now. I mean, here we are in Toledo, and we're talking about the Patriots. We're not talking about the Browns quarterback search or the Hugh Jackson mess or the championship parade tomorrow, the anti-championship parade tomorrow that's going to be held out in Cleveland. We're not talking about Stan Van and his streaky Pistons. We're not talking about the Lions search for a replacement to Jim Caldwell. We're talking about New England. That's how much of a national story this is. And I promise you, in every location in the country, this is what they're talking about. Joint statement from Patriots chairman and CEO Bob Kraft, head coach Bill Belichick, and quarterback Tom Brady. For the past 18 years, the three of us have enjoyed a very good and productive working relationship. In recent days, there have been multiple media reports that have speculated theories that are unsubstantiated, highly exaggerated, or flat out inaccurate. The three of us share a common goal. We look forward to the enormous challenge of competing in the postseason and the opportunity to work together in the future, just as we have for the past 18 years. It is unfortunate that there is even a need for us to respond to these fallacies. As our actions have shown, we stand united. End quote. Now, breaking that down just a little bit, that statement put out by the Patriots, the joint statement by Bob Kraft, Bill Belichick, and Tom Brady, I think the conclusion we can draw is, what a load of crap! If you think for one single solitary second that either Bob Kraft or Bill Belichick or Tom Brady wrote one single word of that sentence or that statement, then you're sniffing some really, really, really good glue. No. Bob Kraft did not write that. Bill Belichick did not write that. Tom Brady did not write that. Somebody in the PR department, somebody in the comms or media team wrote that and is attempting to pass it off as actual gospel. Please give me a break. This story is legitimate. Again, I can't swear, and I don't think anybody outside of maybe Seth Wickersham, who believes it enough to have written it. You don't write these things unless you have a very, very strong belief that your sources inside the Patriots locker room and offices, including front office all the way up to Bob Kraft, since he's quoting people in Bob Kraft's presence, he has to believe that his sources are very, very accurate here, or else he cannot write this kind of a piece. For the rest of us, we don't know how much is true, but we do know, or at least I believe, every reader is of course, free to discern as much of this as being true or false in their own mind. But for me, I believe that a lot of this is true. There is friction. There is a problem. Jimmy Garoppolo was a problem, not him the person, the Jimmy Garoppolo issue, the Jimmy Garoppolo decision, the Jimmy Garoppolo future was a problem that they had to try to figure out. And that somebody was going to be left unhappy whenever they did make whatever decision it was going to be. And in this case, it turns out it's very likely Bill Belichick. So I believe that there is a major issue. I don't know if I believe every single thing that's in this, but you had better believe this. If you think that this is going to be some sort of distraction that will derail the Patriots from their ultimate mission over the course of the next month, forget about it. Just seriously, forget about it. There is no article in ESPN the magazine or in Sports Illustrated or on the front page of the New York Times or what's the paper up there in Boston? The Herald? Boston Herald?
Herald or the Globe, one of the two.
There is no front page article that is going to allow Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, who are the two core pieces of this. Bob Kraft at this stage of the game is largely irrelevant to the big three. It's kind of weird. We think of big three. We think of basketball teams with three all-star players. This big three is really, kind of a two-headed monster when it comes to Belichick and Brady. If you think that either one of those two guys who share five Super Bowl championships with one another and who are the Vegas betting favorites to make it six, if you think they're going to let an article in some magazine or on the front page of some newspaper distract them from that mission now, here and now, you just haven't been paying very close attention. If anything, what this article put together by Seth Wickersham and ESPN the magazine does, it makes the Patriots more dangerous. Bill Belichick is a man who thrives on controversy. He thrives on somebody saying that you can't do this. What? You lost Wes Welker? You lost your best slot receiver? Watch this. What? You don't have Rob Gronkowski? You certainly can't win the Super Bowl without Rob Gronkowski. Watch this. What? You lost Julian Edelman? Brady's favorite target at the beginning of the season. Favorite target, not named Gronkowski. For the entire season, and all you have is Gronk and Danny Amendola, that's your best receiver. The Patriots are done. Watch this. This is what the Patriots do. Anything and everything that everybody outside of that locker room and that organization says will stop them, will derail them, any of those things spur them on to greater heights. It's as if to say, throw whatever kinds of crap at the wall that you want. It is only going to galvanize us and bring us closer together and make us double down on our efforts, or redouble our efforts is a better way to say that, in order to win the sixth ring and then hold it up right in your faces when you want to write your next article. Hey, Seth, come over here. Look at this ring. Now kiss it. That's kind of what their mentality is. I know the people in Pittsburgh are kind of cheering right now. It's like, oh, trouble in paradise, trouble in Patriots. Like, what do they call it? What do they call it when New England is able to take cast-offs from other teams and turn them into Pro Bowl players that all contribute in the same gigantic scheme put together by Bill Belichick, executed with a surgeon's precision by Tom Brady through all of these years? What do we call that? To be able to overcome controversies, to be able to absorb and adapt and to take on players that nobody else wants. I believe they call that the Patriot way. And it didn't get that nickname by accident. It's a method that can't be copied in what we have all come to know as a copycat league. Oh, sure, a lot of teams can have bulletin board material. We are more motivated now than ever because somebody said we couldn't do that. Everybody can play that stupid game. That's not what I'm talking about. The Steelers cut LeGarrette Blount. LeGarrette Blount, largely for too many blunts, LeGarrette Blount goes back to New England and becomes a Pro Bowler, leads the NFL in rushing touchdowns. They have so many reclamation projects on that roster. They have so many average players who would be maybe practice squad players in other cities that become, you know, 50 to 60 to 70 catch guys because of the Patriot way. Because when you get to New England, you buy into Bill Belichick's way or you hit the highway. And they take it and they thrive off of every negative. They feast on negativity. You negative to them, you hate on them. If the country is galvanized against them, they say, you know what, that's all the reason we need to stick this in your faces. And they do it time and time again. So if people in Pittsburgh are cheering, oh, we got them now. If people in, I don't know, Philadelphia, probably not Philadelphia anymore with Nick Foles instead of Carson Wentz, Minnesota, Los Angeles, whoever the team to beat is going to be, the Saints coming out of the NFC, if they all think, well, the Patriots are all distracted now. Now we've got them. No. No, don't think that at all. The damage that is being done to the Patriot way, the damage that is being done to the Patriot brand is going to be felt next year. It's going to be felt in 2020. Well, 2019, I guess. Next year would be 2018, even though we flipped over the calendar. But this 2018 season, the 2019 season, as Tom Brady is 41 and then 42, and Bill Belichick is struggling and working his tail off to try to groom another Jimmy Garoppolo to take over and to complete the succession, the line of succession for when Brady can't do it anymore. And that's what this is all about, by the way. That's when the pain will be felt. The pain will be felt for Bob Kraft, perhaps in a year or 2 years or 3 years, when Tom Brady doesn't have it anymore. And if he plays, by the fact that he's probably going to be the MVP at the age of 40. Stupid sick. Nobody has done such things at this age. To do it at 41 or 42 or 43, if anybody in the world can, it is Tom Brady. But there will come an end, whether it's a year from now or 2 years from now, whatever it is, where he just doesn't have it anymore and he's throwing the ball like Peyton Manning was at the end and just, okay, Father Time is undefeated. It beats everybody at some point. When that day comes and Bill Belichick says, now I can't continue what we have built because you took my heir apparent to Tom Brady away from me because you didn't want to pay him a franchise tag salary in order to be the backup quarterback here. You made me trade Garoppolo, and now I don't have anybody to complete the line of succession. Bill Belichick calls it a day at the same time Tom Brady does. Now you're Bob Kraft. You put all of your eggs in the Brady basket against Belichick's advice. You got rid of Garoppolo so that it wouldn't continue to weigh on Brady to perhaps, you know, edge him toward retirement so this kid can start his career and take off. You threw all of your, you know, eggs into the Brady basket, and once the time comes that basket has a hole in it and Brady can't do it anymore, and Belichick says, I'm out too because I had a plan for continued success in place that you blew up on me, that's when the Patriot way will end. And that's when the Patriots will rue the day that they let all of this happen. But don't think for one second that this is going to manifest itself in Patriot problems over the course of the next month. No, they are still going to be the favorite to win the Super Bowl. Certainly the favorite to come out of the AFC and get back to their eighth Super Bowl. Think about those words for a second. Kush, how many Super Bowls have the Lions been to?
Can we just combine them so we don't have to do this twice and say zero? No, I'm serious, because I know where you're going with that.
How many Super Bowls have the Browns been to?
Yeah, zero.
In how many combined seasons? Patriots have been to eight. In the seven in the Belichick era, eight overall now. You know, we got to go back to 85, of course, when they lost to the Bears. That was their first trip. But seven in the Belichick era if they get back again this year, Belichick and Brady. That's what? You can't make sense of that. I can't process that with any reasonable words. So don't think for one second that this is going to stop them from getting back. It won't. If they get beat, it's going to be because they got beat by a spectacular performance from the likes of Antonio Brown in the AFC Championship game? Are they going to get beat because Ben Roethlisberger just catches fire, or Le'Veon Bell doesn't get hurt this time around and is able to go full strength against the Patriots, and that's what stops him? It'll be because a team rises up and outplays them. Do not think that this distraction, do not think that this ESPN article or all of these national media shows, you know, radio and talk and television programs are all talking about the imminent death of the Patriots. Don't think this week makes them weaker, because it is my full, ardent belief it makes them stronger, because they are the Patriots, and it's just the way they operate. It's a massive story. It's a massive story. We wanted to get a little closer to it, so we're going to go to Boston. We're going to talk to Alex Shane coming up here in just a few. He is a writer for PatsPulpit.com, part of SB Nation. He covers the team. He's going to talk to us about what he believes is real and what isn't real from the Seth Wickersham article in ESPN the magazine. We'll talk about whether or not the Patriots will indeed rebound from this and use this as a rallying point, or if this does somehow weaken them, which I do not believe, at least not until next year or beyond. But that part of the conversation is coming up. Telling you, it's really the only thing going in the NFL today. There's wild card games tomorrow. There's wild card games on Sunday.
And we're going to have all four of them for you, a radio version here on The Ticket, by the way.
Thank you so much. That's a program, an assistant programmer, a program director talking. You got to get that plug in. That's good. I'm glad we're going to have all four of those. Oh, by the way, also the Raiders have called a press conference for Tuesday. Anybody want to guess what that's about? There's some big news stories in the NFL going on right now, including the imminent beginning of the playoffs tomorrow. And all we can talk about is the New England Patriots. This is a massive, massive deal, and it's a massive story, and I definitely want your thoughts on it. 866-240-1065. We'll talk to Alex Shane coming up after the bottom of our local sports center, which comes after we get wild.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents The Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Alrighty then, your Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day has to do with the NBA clash between Western Conference powers last night, Warriors and Rockets. Warriors took out the Rockets in a battle for the top spot in the West. Draymond Green, another triple-double, 17, 14, and 10 assists. The Warriors are now 21-0. When Draymond has a triple-double, and those 21 straight wins are tied for the longest such streak with the late 60s 76ers, who won 21 straight when Wilt Chamberlain had a triple-double. How about that? That is a wild stat. Tops on the list would be the Lakers, who had a 24-game winning streak back in 84 through 87 when Magic Johnson went triple-doubling. That is your Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day. Bottom of the hour, local sports center coming up. Then we're going to talk more about the Patriot Way and whether it can overcome this very, very public storm of controversy as we continue on the extravaganza. ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
Now back to the Bob France extravaganza. ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
Yeah, rolling on. You know, I got to tell you, every time I hear one of those promos, I just want to punch my screen or something. Honestly, the word... Please, professional broadcasters at all locations, national, local level, I don't care if you're a blogger from the basement, the word is not verse. One team doesn't verse another. It is versus, V-S period. It is the abbreviation of V-E-R-S-U-S, which is an actual word. It's not verse. A verse
That's
is
right.
in a song. Stop saying it's Georgia verse Alabama. Stop it. I don't know if this is the retired English teacher in me, the wordsmith in me, the linguist in me, the grammarian in me, but I cannot stand that. That is one of Jim. I don't know. Everybody has their own little peccadilloes.
Yep.
That is one of the ones that just drives like shoots under my fingernails. Just bamboo shoots under my fingernails. That's, I almost said banana shoots. That would have been wrong too. See? See, I don't like being wrong myself. I got to stop until I correct it, for crying out loud. It's not verse. Oh, my goodness gracious. I could do an entire show on all of the things that professional broadcasters mispronounce or say incorrectly.
Oh, goodness. Heck, yeah, we could.
All right. I mean, and you're it's your business. Your business is words. You don't have to know how to do algebra to do what I do. You don't know the periodic table to do what we do in broadcasting. All we have to know is words. We don't have to do numbers. Well, statistics, I suppose. But we can read those because Elias does all the hard work. All we got to do is read. All you have to know is words. And when people screw up words, it just makes me go bonkers. All right, 341, thanks for being with us on the Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. Yes, we're in Toledo, Ohio. No, that's nowhere near Boston, Massachusetts, or Foxborough, Massachusetts. But that's kind of the hub of the sports world today. After Seth Wickersham wrote an article for ESPN, the magazine, essentially saying they are coming apart at the seams. One of the greatest dynasties, if not the greatest dynasty over the last 18 years in the history of the National Football League, is coming apart because Bob Kraft chose Tom Brady over Bill Belichick when it came to the issue of Jimmy Garoppolo. And, oh, by the way, also because Tom Brady chose Alex Guerrero, his life and fitness and health and diet guru, over the Patriots medical staff and training staff. And there was a battle for control of that issue amongst the Patriots locker room. And joining us now to get a little bit more inside than we can get from here is somebody who is there. Alex Shane is an NFL writer for PatsPulpit.com. That is the Patriots page on SB Nation. Alex, thanks for the time. Good sir, how are you?
I am great. And as a blogger from the basement, I appreciate the verses rant you just gave. I'm grateful for it.
Am I right, though? I mean, I'm not. I can't be the only one who's driven just crazy by that, right?
You are spot on, good sir. And someone had to bring it to the world's attention. We're glad it was you.
Well, I wish the whole world could hear me right now. Maybe throw that on your page, because the Patriots, I would imagine you guys are getting a lot of traffic right now, given the fact that even though ESPN broke this thing or wrote this thing, the Patriots are the center of the NFL world right now. There's playoff games tomorrow, Alec, and nobody is talking about it. All anybody is talking about on the national shows and local shows like mine, they're talking about Brady, Belichick, and Bob Kraft. So that kind of gives us an idea of how huge this is.
Yeah, I know. It's funny. This seems to happen every year. Somebody comes out with surprisingly anonymous sources that the Patriots dynasty is coming apart at the seams, and here we are, what, 17 years later, and they're still going okay. If 13-3 in the one seed is coming apart at the seams, I will gladly pull the strings.
Alec, let's talk about some of the meat that's in the article by Wickersham. And first, just to give us some background, are you like on the same level as a beat writer? Are you in the locker room every day? Are you at practice every day? Do you travel to the away games? Just so we know how inside you are.
No, I am just SB Nation is mostly by the fan for the fan content. We are just guys who enjoy covering sports, enjoy talking about sports. We don't have the access. We just kind of do it the way because we like it. We enjoy it. And because of that, we have no agenda. We don't worry about ratings or clicks. We tell it how it is. At least we try to.
Fair enough. That's fine. I just kind of want to find out if you have anything inside. So let's talk about what you read that we read. And being the fact that you are in Boston or nearby, you can talk about what the fans there are saying. What has been the reaction among Pats Nation to this Wickersham article? Are they just as dismissive of it as the Patriots were when they put this phony statement out? I'm calling it a phony statement because there's no way that this is something that Bill Belichick wrote with Tom Brady's assent and Robert Kraft's approval, or any one of the three had anything to do with the statement saying that this is hogwash. This is just somebody in their PR department who said it. But are the fans taking that approach that this is all garbage and none of it is true and we're just going to put our heads down and say no way, no way, no way?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. You know, obviously there's got to be at least some truth in there somewhere. I'm sure, you know, that all the sources are anonymous, and he kind of tricks up a few times throughout it. But Boston sports fans in general are not on the best of terms with ESPN for obvious reasons. There are some articles that come out within the past with the Patriots that have since been widely disproven. Chris Mortensen, the Deflategate, I don't really want to rehash all that nonsense because we're all rational human beings here. But the Patriots fans in general, the Boston people in general, are not the warmest towards ESPN. And so when something comes out like this, when there aren't any facts stated, they're all kind of sources close to the organization without any real confirmation, and then the PR staff, as you said, comes out and refutes it right away, it's really understandable why they take it with a grain of salt. I'm sure there's some truth in there somewhere. But I also feel like, in my personal opinion, a lot of this is just a little bit overblown, a little bit overhyped. It's an interesting storyline, interesting narrative. It gets people talking about the Patriots. Not the speediest sports week. There's NFL playoffs. The bye week's going on. Not a lot going on in the headlines. This is a really good time to let this out, let people talk about it, and get their ire up, and then they can move on and talk about something else, you know?
Yeah, I think there's a lot to unpack there, because I'm glad you said what you said at the beginning. There is certainly going to be some truth in this article. It's too long. It was too detailed with too many multiple sources being quoted, even if they are anonymous. This is how journalism is done. Otherwise, you never have another source if you give their name up. So it's understandable. I'm not going to dismiss it because sources aren't named. I don't know if everything is true, but I feel like there was enough true for this to be have become the story that has become. And let's start with the Alex Guerrero part of this, and then we'll get to the Jimmy Garoppolo part of this. Because I think, though, at the end of the day, there are two big meaty issues in the middle of this story that everybody is talking about. One is the breakdown in the Patriots locker room, and perhaps the breakdown and the schism between training staff / medical staff and Alex Guerrero and Tom as it pertains to TB12. We know that Tom Brady's unique friendship / business arrangement with Guerrero was allowed to flourish for a number of years, right? I mean, Guerrero had access. When we found out a few weeks ago that Guerrero's access had been cut off, it was the first time most of us had heard his name. It's like, who? What do you mean? That's Brady's strength guy. You know, we kind of just, you know, generally, gave him a title like that. Why would they do that? And now we're finding out a little bit more that he had access to train certain players, and that there was a, and you can tell me if I'm wrong about this from what you've gathered, there was a decision that had to be made by Patriots players. Do I get treated for injuries by the medical staff, or do I go to the click, the power brokers that are, you know, Tom Brady and Alex Guerrero, who has all of this access here, and be treated with the TB12 lifestyle? And that was one of the biggest reasons why they had to throw Guerrero out of the locker room and ban him from the team flights and everything else. Is that accurate as far as you know?
Yeah, I think as far as the content of the Wickersham article, the Guerrero stuff probably has the most meat to it. I don't know for sure. I don't think anybody really knows for sure what goes on in the Patriots locker room. I think one of the reasons they're so successful is because they keep things very close to the vest and keep their problems and issues in-house. But I do think that the Guerrero thing has legs. I believe that it's a situation where, you know, Tom Brady, whatever he's doing clearly works for him. He's got a crazy diet with his avocado ice cream and his weird silver lined pajamas, whatever it is, and it's working for him. But as we all know, anytime you go get a medical professional's opinion, what works for one person isn't somebody else's opinion. I don't know a lot about Guerrero's credentials, but it's working for Brady, and that's fine. I think the Patriots are more concerned that just because it's working for Tom Brady doesn't mean you have to dismiss team doctors, whatever anybody else says. And they didn't want to make it seem like if one guy says one thing and Guerrero says something else, you have to pick one or the other. So rather than cause any kind of potentially damaging, physically damaging rifts, they'll just kind of cut him off, let him do his thing with Brady, and just limit his access a little bit more.
Alec, a lot of people today who, you know, are close to the team and cover the team as well have said that Tom Brady has changed in the last several years since he started his relationship with Guerrero and started the TB12 lifestyle and the book and everything else. That he has changed in the way he approaches not only his own personal health, his own personal training, his own personal care, which, by the way, part of this is his ability to go to the Patriots and say, do you realize why I'm still performing at the level I am right now at 40 and why I believe I can do this into my mid-40s? Because I don't get hurt, because I am as healthy as I was when I was 25, and it's because of this lifestyle. It can be very tempting, I would think, for other players to say, damn, he's right. He isn't hurt. Maybe there is something to this. And if that runs counter to the Patriots' training methods and teachings, you could see this would cause where this would cause a problem. Has Brady changed because of that fact in the way that he approaches his relationship with his teammates? And do you think that's a legitimate source of discontent among the other players?
You know, unfortunately, Tom Brady won't return my calls, so I don't really know him all that well. But, you know, I really can't answer that with any veracity. I don't think anybody can. I think that he might have changed, and if he has, so be it. I think he's earned the right to change at this point. But I think if he has changed as a person, if he's gotten a little more, maybe he's prior to shipping, he's getting older, maybe moving toward TB12 brand after playing career is over, whenever that is, I'd like to hope at least he's enough of a professional to realize that, like, maybe we're on different pages, we're at different places in our lives with either my teammates or my coaches or my owner, whoever it is, but this is a workplace, we're not all going to get along, we have it together, we can do our thing and still be successful on the field. I'll do my weird stuff off the field. I'll leave it there. We'll fix our problems and move on, you know. But as he changes the person, I have no idea.
We're talking to Alex Shine. He writes about the Patriots for PatsPulpit.com. There's a big story published by ESPN on the magazine. Actually hit the website, of course, first. And it says that Alex Guerrero has caused a major problem for Tom Brady clubhouse, or the locker room, I should say, and at the practice facility for the Patriots. And now the other part of the story, Alec, that is kind of getting all of the play, is the trade of Jimmy Garoppolo. the meat of the story, again, for me in this regard, that speaks to the disconnect between owner Bob Kraft and coach Bill Belichick and, of course, impacts Tom Brady, is the decision to trade Jimmy Garoppolo that Belichick wanted, according to the sources quoted in the article, wanted a line of succession to keep the Patriot way, to be able to continue the dynasty even after Tom Brady can't do it anymore. And that meant the trained and ready in waiting Jimmy Garoppolo, ready to step in as soon as Brady hits the wall, that everybody does because of Father Time. And that once it became clear that they could not get Jimmy Garoppolo re-signed to a regular contract, and they were going to have to choose to either franchise him as a backup quarterback or give him the starting job and usher Tom out the door, Bob Kraft sided with Tom Brady. I'm not doing that to Tom Brady. He's very close with Tom Brady, and he essentially started meddling in something that he had never done before, and that is with the roster. He told Bill Belichick in a meeting that we needed to trade Jimmy Garoppolo, let him go somewhere else. We can't pay him to stay here and back up Tom, but it's going to pressure Tom out the door anyway. And that really set Belichick off. Belichick reportedly lit into him, as it's worded in the article. And he never wanted to be a part of something where the owner started making football decisions. Again, from your understanding of the team being there in a Patriot world, if you will, is that accurate? Is the disconnect mostly about the Garoppolo deal?
I think if the disconnect exists, I think the Garoppolo deal may have been a unfortunate tragedy of circumstance, both some kind of inner workings or inner dealings. I think the reality is Jimmy Garoppolo came along for the Patriots about 2 years too early. If he was drafted in 2015 or so, it would have been a perfect timing. Brady was about 42, 43, as Garoppolo's deal was coming to a close, and they could have transitioned very smoothly. But unfortunately, he's a free agent after this season. The franchise tag is up to $26 million, I think. They aren't going to have $22 million for Tom Brady, $26 million for Garoppolo. That's a lot of salary cap space on two guys. Someone had to go. Belichick, I think, kept him around this season in case, as you so rightly mentioned, Brady's 40, Father Time is undefeated. There's a chance he could have come out this year and not played that well. He could have struggled and been off and been inaccurate. And if that was the case, I don't think Belichick would have hesitated to pull the plug on Tom Brady, either had him retire or trade him or whatever the case may be. But since Brady's still playing at a very high level, a potential MVP candidate this year, there was really no choice to try and move Jimmy Garoppolo while he could. And you can get a second-round pick for him for basically half-season rental. You take it. Now, did Bob Kraft pull the trigger on this and put his foot down? Possibly. There might have been a disagreement in-house. But I don't think it's the kind of thing where if the disagreement did take place, it's ripping the team apart. It might have just been a professional disagreement between two businessmen that they've worked out, and it is what it is, and now they're moving on.
The sources, though, that spoke to Wickersham clearly would say it hasn't been worked out. That the disagreement between two businessmen happened, and it hasn't been worked out, and this is where the rift is, because, you know, at the end of the day, it would appear, I mean, first of all, one would think that Brady's performance this year should have put any of those disagreements to bed. Bob could say, Bill, do you see? He's 40 and he's still playing like he's 28. He's going to be the MVP. I cannot imagine. Can you think of somebody else that deserves the MVP more than Tom Brady does this year? With Wentz not finishing the season, he was a popular name. Antonio Brown didn't finish the season. He was a popular name. The only guy to be named unanimous All-Pro, by the way. Nobody else is going to be the MVP other than Tom Brady. One would think that would be enough for Belichick to say, yeah, you're right. He still has it. And until he doesn't have it anymore, we can't play Jimmy Garoppolo, so I guess he had to go. Shouldn't that have straightened the whole thing out?
Maybe it has by now. You know, the trade deadline was late October. This rift could have been very old as far as we know. I wish I knew who the source was. I know you're absolutely right, journalism being what it is, you can't reveal your sources. But, you know, I wish I knew when this kind of all this starts to go down. And I'd like to know what Belichick thinks now. But, again, I think at the absolute worst-case scenario, it's just two people with a business disagreement that are going to still figure out how to work well together. I think they still know where each person's bread is buttered. And as I know better than most people, I am not well-liked at my office place. I'm really annoying and obnoxious. But we find a way to work together. And I think this is what the Patriots are going to do no matter what. I'd be very surprised if this was some kind of irreconcilable difference between them. Bob Kraft has made a very good decision after the Bill Parcells era not to meddle too much in the affairs of the team. It's worked out very well for him. So to suddenly step in now, just because it's Tom Brady, who's probably the greatest Patriot who will ever play, if not of all time. Again, possibly, but, you know, I don't have enough information inside this locker room to make an accurate decision. All I can go on is how the team has done and performed and done business in years past. And so if something's going to change, I'd personally be surprised by it.
We don't cover Bill Belichick every day, you know, out here in other parts of the country, the way you do there. So you have at least a better, you know, observational knowledge of this, if not inside knowledge of this, though. Does Bill Belichick appear to you to be the kind of a guy who is going to allow the owner to tell him what to do? I mean, he's been not only coach but de facto general manager there for this entire dynastic run that has included 7 Super Bowls and 5 wins. You know, and again, the fact that he's now going to have to try to draft another Jimmy Garoppolo type and in maybe the span of a year, because who knows when Brady hits the wall. Is it after 41? Is it after 42? So maybe he's got to. He's got, you know, a very short window of time to train the guy to replace him to keep that train steamrolling down the tracks, which was his goal with Garoppolo. So is Belichick the kind of guy who's going to tolerate that? Or do you think when Brady says, or when Brady can't do it anymore and he does retire, that's when Belichick says, I'm not going to pick up the pieces and put them back together again. I didn't create this mess. I had the line of succession ready to go. Now is my time to retire as well.
Yeah, that's a good question. Now, I think that the thing is, even this article completely aside, looking at the logistics of Tom Brady, Jimmy Garoppolo in this season going forward, I'm just trying to figure out how the Patriots keep them both. With Brady playing as well as he is, with Garoppolo playing as well as he did last season, you know, the reality of the NFL is right now, if you're a quarterback who comes in, starts, and wins a game, you have to win one game, be you Mike Glennon or Matt Flynn or Ryan Fitzpatrick, you're going to get a massive contract somewhere. Some team, probably Cleveland or Jacksonville, is going to pay you a lot of money to throw the ball for them. And I just don't see Jimmy Garoppolo not getting like a $7-plus million contract this offseason, the free agent. So even if there was no quote-unquote rift or whatever's going on, I just personally can't figure out logistically how you keep both Brady and Garoppolo, the salary cap being what it is. So Belichick, I think, had to deal with that no matter what happened. Whether Bob Kraft said something or not, he probably wouldn't be able to keep Jimmy Garoppolo regardless. So I think he saw that writing on the wall for Brady playing so well, and he got what he could for him when the trade deadline came.
Last thing, Alec and Alec Shane, and we'll let you run after this. Alec writes for PatsPulpit.com, a part of SB Nation, covering the New England Patriots. As it pertains to this playoff, does the timing of this create a problem? Is there a distraction here? Is this the kind of thing that could, now that it's, you know, if the let's say for the sake of argument that everything in the article is true. And I don't think that is the case, because I think that's really, really hard to get every single one of them right. But I think the large premise of this is true. But let's say everything is true. And now it's not just in-house discord. It's been publicized. And every time there is a microphone open and somebody has to speak as mandated by the NFL to the press after practices and games and everything else, they have to speak on this. Is there any way that this derails them from their mission here of getting back to the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I mean, as a fan, you know, my writing aside, as a Patriots fan, I could not be happier with the timing of this, because no team better than the Patriots at galvanizing behind these so-called controversies, locking themselves down, circling the wagons, and using it as motivation. You know, you look at Spygate, they went 16-0, almost won the Super Bowl there. You look at the Deflategate, Super Bowl. You look at the Tom Brady suspension, Super Bowl. So every time one of these things comes out, and they come out about once a year, again, it's like clockwork with these things, and usually by ricochet. Or not, ironically enough. They seem to use it as motivation. They'll get mad about this, and they will not be distracted at all. The only thing I don't like about it is, no matter what happens now going forward, if the Patriots were to lose in the playoffs to the Steelers, the Chiefs, whoever, it's not going to be because they got outplayed by the Chiefs or the Steelers. That's not going to be the narrative going forward. It's going to be this. This is now going to dominate the storyline. And if they win the Super Bowl, it's not because they're a good team, who's well coached, a good quarterback. It's because they were galvanized by this kind of article. So I don't like how the narrative shifts because of this, but overall, it will not be a distraction for the team.
Alec Shane, PatsPulpit.com. Alec, thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it. Best of luck to the your Patriots going forward.
Hey, thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
You got it. Have a good one. There you go. That's Alec Shane. He's coming from Boston. As he said, he's SB Nation, so he doesn't have any inside information necessarily to share. But, again, they cover the team, and they get to see and hear from Belichick and Brady on a daily basis, things that we do not get here in the rest of the country. So I thought that would have a little bit of value. If you want to talk on this, next half hour is wide open on his Free for All Friday. If you'd like to speak on the Patriots, tell me whether or not you think that most of this is true. And I'll tell you this. Here's what I want to know. Do you think that Tom Brady is going to hit a wall after next season that would have made it worthwhile to keep Jimmy Garoppolo there? Because in my opinion, And I don't know if I'm, you know, Tom Brady, to me, is the MVP. I don't think there's anybody else who has had a better year at any other position. You might look at somebody like Drew Brees, who won the quarterback rating championship, if you will, because he finished with a quarterback rating of 104.7. No, I beg your pardon. Alex Smith of the Chiefs, who is not a candidate here because the Chiefs were 10-6 and had a miserable spell, but he had the highest rating at 104.7. Then Brees at 103.9. Then Brady at 102.8. But Brady had more touchdown passes than any of them, fewer interceptions, and quite frankly was just, you know, whose team was 13-3. And won the home field advantage throughout the playoffs. Tom Brady had the best season of anybody, and he's 40. Because of that, I don't think it changes because the calendar flips to 41. He has never been a guy that is required to run a 4-3-40 or to throw the 75-yard bomb. That's not his style. It's a different type of style that maximizes his ability and minimizes the amount of athleticism that is needed, which is why he could still do it at 42 and 43 and who the hell knows, maybe even a 44. I'm not a Patriots fan, but I'm a believer in what Tom Brady has been able to do, and I think he can continue to do. If you want to talk on that or anything else, let's get you up and on the radio. 866-240-1065 after the top of the hour Sports Center coming your way next.
There's a physical toll taken by round after round of playoff. I think one of the differentiation points of the Southeastern Conference and a number of the autonomy conferences is the physical toll that's experienced in these highly competitive, highly intense games against top-level programs. And I want to be sensitive before we just start adding games that there'd be a full conversation. I think all of that combines to say 4 is the right point for us. From a bigger picture perspective, I think there are some limitations that keep us focused on 4. So I think the answer is that we are focused on 4. I don't know that anybody's ever said never, ever, but certainly it's not been a discussion topic, and I don't foresee this year being a motivation for change unless a lot of people alter their perspectives.
Yeah, I'd be all for 18. You know, I'm an old high school coach and kind of like the idea of quarterfinals, semifinals, and give more teams, you know, opportunities. And, you know, they have to kind of restructure some things with the number of games and the bowl games. But I think you see it, you know, every year that there's more focus just on the 4 playoff teams, and then the rest of the bowls I don't think are quite what they once was. And so I think we really got to take a hard look at this thing moving forward, and I'd be all for the 8 teams.
When you've got the top pick in the draft that Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen have declared for, that Josh Allen's going to be in, that Baker Mayfield's going to be in, I don't care if you're Cleveland, you got 1-4. I had someone suggesting the other day, oh, here's what Cleveland should do. They should go Saquon Barkley at 1 and then come back at 4 and go get Baker Mayfield or the quarterback they like there. And I said, that would be, in my mind, ridiculous. I think this franchise has shown long enough over time that it shouldn't get cute on quarterbacks. And if one of these guys, Darnold or Rosen, is the guy that John Dorsey recognizes that he likes atop the draft, time to turn in the card.
His coaching style is not for everybody, as we can say safely. You know, it's a coaching style that's based on fear and negativity. It's a pressured atmosphere. And, you know, I think Tom has transitioned to where he appreciates positive thinking and positive motivation more than a lot of people. He's been very vocal about that. You know, he's been doing this for a long time. He's been eating this crud for a long time. And he's like, come on, seriously? Like, still, I have to listen to this? And I think that's what he's explained to people, is that, like, you know, I've done all this stuff, we've made all this beautiful music together, and still I'm kind of getting jumped on here. Alex Guerrero has been an issue in the building for a long time. I think that he became a bigger issue this fall when he and Brady were promoting the TB12 Method book. I think that players in the building, there was an unspoken pressure and tension about where they should train. Did they sort of join the clique and get in with Tom and go to TB12 and risk alienating Belichick, or do they stay with the Patriots trainers and risk alienating Tom?
You would look toward the future of the organization, and you're going towards a coach, because I think Mr. Kraft also can look down the line and see Tom's not going to play. He wants 45. I've even talked to Tom. I'm like, 45, man, are you sure? He thinks, yes, it's going to be 45, Teddy B, but I'm like, come on, I'll give you 42. Further on the point, would Mr. Kraft ever take it upon himself to say, I've chosen upon these two quarterbacks, I'm going with Brady? That's never had a situation when I was there. We were never put in a situation like that. Tom was in his heyday back then, so that would be news to me also.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Is it crazy to say that he is still in his heyday? Is it insane to say that Michigan graduate Tom Brady at 40 is still in his prime? Maybe. Maybe. Maybe not his prime. But he's about to win the MVP against guys who are 15 years younger than he is. Stars who are 25, 26, 27 in their prime. So what does that tell you? Hour number two underway of the extravaganza right here on this free-for-all Friday. ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. There are some people that defy conventional wisdom. There are some people that defy the laws of aging, of gravity, of whatever. I mean, it's just real. It's just there. Some people can do this. LeBron James is doing it in the National Basketball Association. At age 33 now, he is still playing like he's 23 because of what he does with his body. Sometimes people can transcend time. Now, again, Father Time is undefeated. He eventually will knock everybody out. It's just reality. Everybody knows that. But some people can stave off that knockout for a lot longer than others. And I have no reason to doubt that Tom Brady can't continue to play at this level until he's 44. And that would be three more seasons. Actually, if you include 44, it would be four more seasons. And you got to say, how can somebody do that when nobody has ever been great beyond age 41? And the answer is because nobody has been this great at age 40. And nobody has the game down to a science where the offense is just scheduled, or not scheduled. The offense is just, it is built, and that's a really lame word, but that's all I can come up with right now. But the offense is just built to his strengths. It has been strategized to the point where he knows exactly when and where and how long he has to get rid of the ball so he doesn't take the kind of hits that other quarterbacks take that make them, you know, knock them out of the game by age 36 if they have had a long career. Remember, if you come out of college at 22, if you play all 4 years and you play till you're 36, you've played 14 years. You know what the average length of an NFL career is? It's 3.5 years. If you play until 36, you were a long gray beard, a great player, an all-timer. If you play until you're 40, it's like that's ridiculous. If you play until you're 41, 2, 3, 4 at the level he is, it's just not possible. But it is for certain people. And if I look at Tom Brady, I'm looking at the Jim Cushman, would you agree with me that you should probably have to be first-team All-Pro if you're going to win the MVP?
I would think so. It makes it line up better in your head.
Yeah, I just think that's a common sense thing. And if I look at the NFL's first-team All-Pro team that was announced today and try to find myself somebody who deserves the MVP more than Tom Brady, I come up empty, and I'm just looking at all of them. You know, he's the first-team All-Pro quarterback, and he should be. No disrespect to anybody else who had great seasons, but Tom Brady is the first-team All-Pro quarterback, so that means eliminate Breeze from MVP, right? Eliminate Smith, eliminate Roethlisberger, eliminate any other quarterback from that. This is the first-team All-Pro, so therefore he is the only guy at quarterback who could win the MVP, which then takes you to the next level. Are there any running backs who could win the MVP? Well, Le'Veon Bell could have, possibly, but he didn't play the whole season, sat out the last game, lost the NFL rushing title to Kareem Hunt, and even though he put up tremendous numbers from scrimmage as a wide receiver, as a receiving tailback as well, he's not going to win the MVP. Any wide receiver that could have, again, going to the Steelers, Antonio Brown, he's the only unanimous all-pro pick, first-team all-pro pick. He could have been and would have been a real contender for MVP had he not gotten injured against the Patriots and had to end up missing the last couple of games of the season. Forget about pretty much anybody else in the receiving position, and forget about defense because defensive players never win MVP. Tom Brady's MVP at age 40. So if this came down to should Bob Kraft throw in with Bill Belichick, who wanted to keep Garoppolo, and that meant franchising him and keep him on the bench, keeping the seat warm, or I should say waiting in the wings, is a better way to say that, for Tom Brady to eventually retire, or throw his lot in with Tom Brady and say, we got to get rid of Garoppolo. We can't pay him a franchise tag salary to be Brady's backup for the next 2 years. I think Brady is still going to do this for 2, 3, or 4 more years. I can't blame Bob Kraft for doing that. On the flip side, I can't blame Bill Belichick for being just a little bit bent. He's about to lose his offensive coordinator, Josh McDaniels, who's going to get a head coaching job with one of the available positions. Maybe Detroit. Who knows? He's going to lose Matt Patricia, his defensive coordinator, who's going to get a head coaching job somewhere. Who knows? Maybe Detroit. And he has already lost his backup quarterback, and he's got now got to find a way to groom and prepare and you know, train another backup to replace Brady in his Belichick version of the Patriot way. So I can see why he's upset too. So to me, there's just some decisions that had to be made by some very powerful people. Kraft went one way. Belichick wished it was the other way. And now we've got discord. But guess what? I can't imagine it having played out any other way. I can't imagine Bob Kraft having said, okay, Bill, you've got it. We'll keep Garoppolo this year on a franchise tag because he'll be a free agent. We'll pay him $25 or $26 million, more than we're paying Tom Brady, by the way, to be the backup. And then next year we'll franchise him again if we have to, if Brady has another MVP caliber season. You can only do that twice in a row, the way the Redskins did with Kirk Cousins, by the way. You can't just keep doing that. And we'll just hope that Brady fades away so that Garoppolo can take over. But what happens if Brady doesn't fade? If he continues to throw up 4,500 yards, 32 touchdowns, only 8 interceptions, 104 quarterback rating, 13-3, and goes to another Super Bowl. What do you do? You can't just shove that guy out the door. You know, this isn't, he's not an NBA legend in his 20th season, averaging 8.6 points per game and still wanting $25 million. He's still at the top of his game. It's really a fascinating just study in how NFL franchises, particularly the most successful one of probably our lifetimes, are built and are able to withstand all of these different tests and trials and tribulations of free agency and age, and continue to win. Jimmy in Toledo wants to get in on these Patriot games. That was a movie, if my memory serves. Jimmy, what's going on, brother? How are you?
Well, here's the thing. I'd argue a lot of things, but Brady's great. But the Patriot way was constructed by one man, and that's Bill Belichick. And Father Time will catch Brady. But more than that, if he played behind any other offensive line or any other scheme or for any other coach, he wouldn't be Tom Brady. Fact. You couldn't put him in Indianapolis, and I bet TB12 and his pliability would mean nothing. He would be on the injured reserve list, along with Andrew Luck.
But let me ask you this, Jimmy. How can you say that when he has been playing now for 20 years? And
Hold on,
let me finish.
Hold on. Wait, you've had 30 minutes.
I got to ask the question before you can start answering it. You got to let me ask it before you can start answering it. All right? In 20 years, how much turnover has there been on that offensive line? How much turnover has there been in that backfield? How much turnover within the course of a single season, let alone over 20 years,
has there
been a receiver? He's only played with one
superstar receiver
in all of that
and
time.
Who's been the architect of the player personnel decisions? Who's been the one constant that with the game plans that change for every opposing defense? Because that's the one thing about the Patriot way, is they tailor their game plans. They do things differently for every team they play from week in, week out. It's always different. That's why they're different. They're not one way. They do it multiple ways. They tailor. That's why you just can't put a cookie cutter on them. But what I'm trying to say is I understand Brady's great. There's no two ways about it. But so is Belichick. And I would argue you had seen this before. You've seen it in Green Bay. It's never pretty. Remember Montana, the Young? Was that pretty? Do you remember Favre to Aaron Rodgers? That wasn't pretty either. These divorces aren't pretty. But here's the thing. All right, you might get a year out of Brady. You might even get two or three. But what Belichick knows is that Garoppolo has got 10. And in the end, it's the system that helped make Brady. That's what's going to be the longevity.
Here's where you and I differ, Jimmy. You are making a definitive statement where I would be asking a very serious question. It's chicken. It's chicken and it's egg. Is it the system that made Brady, or could Belichick have ever built this system with any other quarterback?
Hold on a second.
Brady?
We have some evidence, though. Just about everybody he's ever plugged into that system has done pretty darn well. Jacoby Brissett looks pretty good, even in Indianapolis. Ryan Mallett's probably the only guy that's never looked good in that system. Jimmy Garoppolo's went, and he's made, what, the 49ers were what, 0-9, 0-10? They finished 6-10. Who else?
But what you listen to what you're saying. Listen to what you're saying, Jimmy.
No, wait a second.
Hold on, Jimmy, listen. Wait, listen to what you're saying. You're saying that these guys who came up and did well in Belichick's system went elsewhere and did really well too. And guess what? They're not running in New England or in San Francisco. They're not running Belichick's system. They're not running that in Indianapolis. And these guys are doing well elsewhere, like you're saying. So that's what I'm saying. You can't say it's all the system if they're going in other places. Maybe they're just really good players.
No, wait a second.
Maybe
no.
Tom Brady is just the greatest quarterback of all time.
They didn't
and that's
succeed.
What makes Belichick's system look so good there.
But what I'm telling you is that they have a – when they put him in – when they plugged people in New England, Matt Castle did what? He went 10-5 without Brady. Jacoby Brissett won
a couple of games, yes.
Okay, yeah, but that – well, what
but
what
as
I'm
you're
saying,
pointing out, they're also winning
saying,
in other cities. They're winning in other cities,
no,
too, which means
second,
it's not
Bobby,
just Belichick.
Don't put words in my mouth. What I'm saying is when the Patriots...
Wait a second.
You're mischaracterizing.
Jimmy, what do you mean don't put words in your mouth? Your words were they finished 6-10 because of Jimmy Garoppolo out in San Francisco. You are saying they're winning in other cities.
Mischaracterizing what I'm saying. What I'm trying to say is what everybody that he's put in to replace Brady when he's needed to has won. That's it.
They went
10-5.
That's fine. I'm still saying I think you're trying to say with a definitive answer something that nobody can say, and that is, did Bill Belichick make Tom Brady, or did Tom Brady do something spectacular?
Did Tom Brady play defense
and take Bill Belichick's system to heights that it would never reach?
Let me ask you this: If did Tom Brady build? Who's more responsible for building the Patriots, Tom Brady or Bill Belichick?
Well, obviously, for building the rest of the roster, that certainly doesn't. It doesn't, you know, that's not up to the quarterback, obviously. But there is a legitimate question. So what you're saying to me then, Jimmy, you're saying that Bill Belichick is so godlike that would Bill Belichick have won these five Super Bowls he has with, well, Matt Castle, Jacoby Brissett, Jimmy Garoppolo, because everybody does it when they go into his system the way you're saying it. So Tom Brady wasn't really the key factor to all of that. Anybody could have done it. Is that what you're suggesting?
I didn't say that. I didn't suggest
that. I'm asking you if that's what you're suggesting.
No, that is not what I'm saying. Brady is legitimate. No, Brady is legitimately great. However, this notion, the ultimate arrogance here is that the Patriots are so good that Brady actually believes that, and we were all thinking that he can actually go to 45 years old and win championships.
He might be right.
And that the owner can get involved and override the very guy that came to New England in the first place and built this thing. And that will be their downfall. That the guy that actually molded and, because without Bill Belichick coming to New England and spurning the Jets to take Kraft's offer, this thing doesn't happen to begin with.
Well,
and he forgot.
I would
and
submit
he forgot
to you that,
that.
Just, there's just as much there's
that.
Just as much evidence, Jimmy. And thanks for the call, my man. There is just enough evidence to suggest that Bill Belichick hadn't tripped over Tom Brady in the sixth round the way that he did. And that's right. A lot of people want to give Belichick credit for drafting Brady in the first place. He knew something that nobody else knew. No, bullcrap. If he did, he wouldn't have passed over him five times in the first five rounds. He tripped. He took a flyer on the kid from Michigan. If he hadn't tripped over Tom Brady in the sixth round out of Michigan, Bill Belichick is coaching Drew Bledsoe at the start of his era in New England. And then what comes after Drew Bledsoe? I don't know, but I promise you it isn't five championships. That's it. I promise you. You can say he built this, he built that, he built the other thing. But if he doesn't trip over Tom Brady in round six, he's not a five-time Super Bowl winning head coach. Tom Brady made that happen more than anybody else, more than any running back, linebacker, safety, Rodney Harrison. I don't care who your great Patriots are. Nobody is more responsible for that than Tom Brady at the most difficult position, the most important position in all of team sports. And Bill Belichick got the right guy. And did Bill Belichick surround him with the rest of the talent? Did he build the Patriot way? Absolutely. Let me put it to you this way. I don't think that Tom Brady would have five Super Bowl championships without Bill Belichick, but I believe he could play in other cities and have won a couple. I don't think that Bill Belichick would have won five Super Bowls without Tom Brady, but he probably could have won a couple. The point is, they are both responsible for this tremendous dynasty that was built over 18 years. And if Bob Kraft had to choose one or the other, that I hope maybe maybe Bill is right that Garoppolo can go on to do the things that Brady can do, or I can ride Brady into the ground knowing that he's still playing at a high level at 40, I can't blame Bob Kraft for making that choice. Can. Sam is in Sylvania with some thoughts on this. Sam, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, what's going on, Bob? Hey, I tend to say kudos to the last caller because I tend to agree that, you know, Dan Marino was, in my opinion, is the GOAT, or he's one, two, or three, or four, depending on the criteria, but he didn't have the team around him. And I think Drew Bledsoe was a pretty darn good quarterback, and I think that Castle performed very well. And I think a lot of those, you go back and you look at the criteria, I mean, they had number one, number four, number three, number two ranked defenses as well. It's a combination of both. Tom Brady's fantastic. My question is this. When you talk about Tom Brady and you talk about MVP, I need to know a little bit more than just, I need to know, hey, criteria-wise, what are we looking at? I don't care who voted him on the, you know, first-team All-American or whatever.
Well, Sam,
I don't
Sam,
know
you
who
tell
does
me, what is your criteria for an MVP? Tell me how you look at it.
Here's how I look at it. I try to look at it. There's so many angles you can look at it. I'm always curious because it's not a foregone conclusion. When I hear things like, and I'm a Saints fan, you know that I've called before.
Sure.
Drew Brees, 72% completion percentage, okay? He's in a system this year where he's got the two, a good tandem of running backs. They're not asking him to pass for 5,000 yards, which he's done five times.
Right.
No one else has done that, okay? So I don't think the amount of yards has anything to do with it because it depends on the system and what you got surrounding you. I really don't think the amount of touchdown passes for that same reason matter as well because maybe you're running the ball in the end zone. If you've got Kareem Hunt, like Alex Smith does, who has a higher quarterback rating than Brady, chances are if you look at those touchdowns, he's not forced to throw those touchdowns.
Okay, let me interrupt.
Yeah,
because
sure.
Because I see where you're going, and you make some fine points. It's those reasons, though. I think what you're doing, whether it's intentional or not, is underscoring why I said Tom Brady has to be the MVP. Who does he have in his running game? He has Deion Lewis. Deion Lewis is nobody's All-Pro, never will be. They are not a primarily running team. Their leading runner has 896 yards. That's Deion Lewis, and Deion Lewis has, what, six touchdowns on the ground. And then when you look at, so you think, okay, then they must have to pass the ball. Well, yes, they do. They do to be successful in New England with Bill Belichick's system and that running game. He's got to throw the ball. So what has he got? His receivers are Brandon Cooks and Danny Amendola.
Well, let me interrupt
you there.
Again,
neither one of them are all pros.
They each caught
passes in the number in the 60s, not 110 like Antonio Brown. And, of course, he does have Rob Gronkowski, depending on how many games
he's tight end maybe in the history of the game.
Say again?
Best pass catching tight end maybe in the history of the game.
I would still defer to Kellen Winslow from Air Coryell in the Chargers in that category.
But he's in the discussion.
Yeah, he's up there.
Kellen Winslow isn't currently playing. Here's the other thing that I think we need to take into account, because one of the criteria that you had mentioned when you were talking about him as the MVP was his record. That goes to a couple things, not only the fact that the defense, the running backs, the coaching staff, and all those things dictate that record. But when I hear people compare Ben Roethlisberger or Tom Brady, when they talk record, I just want people to know, if New Orleans or Carolina or Atlanta, who are all in the playoffs right now, got to play Cleveland and Cincinnati and the Ravens for six games a year, that'd be a lot different than playing a playoff-caliber team every other week. And then playing the Vikings and the Patriots and the Rams in your non-division schedule. That's a little different. So I think when it comes to record, please don't tell me that New England's schedule was as tough as New Orleans.
I don't have their strength of schedules in front of me at the moment, but I'll be happy to look that up. But here's the thing. they average that every year. They average 12 or 13 wins a year. That's not an accident, and that's not something that I think anybody
just anybody can do. But the MVP is a year-by-year basis. MVP for 2017 has nothing to do with MVP for 2016.
That is true. And in 2017, and I got to run there, Sam. Thanks for the call because I'm getting late. We got to talk high school basketball with Bill Clark. But here's the thing. Nobody being asked to do what they had to do for their offense in what it takes to win a division and win home field advantage throughout the playoffs the way that the Patriots did. Nobody did more for their team in that course than Tom Brady did. It's not close. And if you say don't count yards, what do you count? Don't count touchdown passes? Again, what do you count? You talked about Dan Marino being one of the GOATs of all time, and I agree, by the way. What is he best known for? It's not winning two Super Bowls. It's about yards and touchdowns, which he absolutely had to do. And that's exactly what Tom Brady had to do. And, oh, by the way, he did it without his most reliable receiver this season, which is Julian Edelman. And he has done it every single year without those guys. I hate the Patriots. And during their rivalry between Tom Brady and Peyton Manning, I was Team Peyton, not Team Tom. But my lying eyes are not deceiving me. He is that good. And he is just as good at 40 as he was at 30. And that leads me to believe that, again, Robert Kraft rolling the dice saying he thinks he can be just as good at 41 and 2 and 3, I would not bet against the cat. All right, let me get out here. Bottom of the hour, local sports center coming your way. Then talk a little high school football. Bill Clark joins Kush coming up next right here. Did I say football?
You said football. High school basketball. We're talking a lot of football today.
High school basketball with the voice of high school sports, all of them, football, basketball, and beyond, of course, Bill Clark. That's coming up next right here on The Ticket.
Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Back we are here on this final segment of this Friday edition, this free-for-all Friday edition of the Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Fascinating conversation we've had all day long so far on this whole Patriots, Brady, Belichick, Kraft, and all the little intricacies of it. But time to switch gears a little bit. It's Friday night. We're past the Christmas and New Year's and all that stuff, so that means a lot of things getting back to normal as far as the schedules and everything is concerned, and that includes high school basketball all around the area. Your programming update real quick. We'll have a great one for you. Whitmer, Central Catholic, Bill Clark and the crew will have the call about 7 o'clock, the coverage time, and of course, after that game, returning after a couple week hiatus for the holidays, the high school basketball scoreboard show. We'll be back on the air to give you all the updates on all things Friday night basketball and to help us kind of talk not just specifically of some of these games that we got going on tonight. There are a couple of good ones around the area, but we're starting to get enough games in. We're into January now. We're about, 7 weeks, give or take, away from the high school playoffs later on. So getting an idea of kind of where the various leagues stand around the area, not just the matchups, and to help us break it all down, we welcome back onto the program. First time in 2018 onto the program, the voice of high school sports here in Toledo, Northwest Ohio, Southeast Michigan, Bill Clark back on the program with us. Good afternoon, Bill. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Jim. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you and yours as well. Absolutely. Well, as I kind of just, you heard me lay out right there, we're going to talk some of these games, but it's also kind of where we kind of stand with some of these leagues right now. We're starting to get enough games into the season. Yes, there's enough left that we're getting an idea of who's starting to be more for real or not in terms of some of these leagues. Let's start with the game you got tonight, Whitmer Central Catholic, coming up here on the Ticket about 7 o'clock, the coverage time. First of all, break down this one that you'll be calling tonight.
Well, it'll be interesting. Central's starting to get their basketball legs. Of course, a lot of their players from the basketball team around the football team, of course, because of that deep run, which has become more the rule rather than the exception at Central Catholic. The basketball team has to move some of their games around. So talking to TJ Hunt this week in preparation for tonight's game, he said his kids are getting their basketball legs and they're getting in pretty good shape to the point where they've played 7 games in 8 days when the schedule started to squeeze in because they had a couple days off early because the football players got there late. So they had to adjust the schedule, but they're getting into shape now, in basketball shape. They're 5-2 and 1-1 in the league. They just finished playing in the Southview tournament over the Christmas holiday. Southview won that tournament, beating Central Catholic in the championship game. But according to TJ, his team is molding into shape, and he sees a lot of positives coming as we start the January portion of the track schedule. And on the other side, Ryan Brown in his fifth year at Whitmer, they've got a pretty good ball club as well. We had them just before the break with St. John's, and they had kind of a rough night shooting, and St. John's got the better of them. But tonight it should be interesting. They're fresh off a second-place finish in their tournament. They went down to Florida over the Christmas break and played three games down there and ended up losing the championship game of that tournament to Montgomery Bell out of Tennessee, a team that was in the state Final Four last year in Tennessee. So they played some really good competition. So this should be an interesting game. It's the first meeting of the year between these two teams. So we'll see how it jumps off because, as we said, Central's starting to get their basketball legs a little bit more solid. And Whitmer's been pretty solid all year long. They had a blip in the meter, as we said, on the 22nd of December, just before the break against St. John's. But Ryan Brown's kids are ready to play. They're very athletic, and it should be a pretty exciting game.
Yeah, and kind of the way that the track is laying out so far here in the not so early anymore going is you have Whitmer, St. Francis, St. John's, and Central Catholic, which to me begs the question, A, what's up with Lima Senior? They have usually a pretty decent program. They're kind of struggling a little bit this year, and does that take some strength away from the track at all?
I don't think it takes a lot of strength away. I mean, you got four teams in an 8-team league that normally it splits. You know, you got four real good ones and four that are struggling a little bit, and that's what it is this year. Only Lima Senior is one of the strugglers this year. And I think it's part of the problem is they're a young team. They lost a lot off their team last year, but, you know, they're doing as best they can. But I think they're still trying to find themselves, too. The kids down there are trying to find their roles. And I think it's tough to play at Lima Senior from the standpoint that you know, when you have a home game, that's great. But when you got to travel in this league, they're putting a lot of miles on their bus. And I think that's tough. You know, I know they're 18, 17-year-old kids, and they should get out of the bus and not have a problem. But I think when you're driving that far for four out of your eight league games, that makes it kind of tough. And it's tough for the teams to go down there, too. You know, you got lousy weather tonight. It's cold. Off the top of my head, I can't think if Lima Senior is home or not. But that being said, I think they'll be okay. I mean, I don't think they're in the top half of the track this year. I think the teams that you mentioned will probably be there, St. Francis, St. John's, Whitmer, and Central Catholic. But, you know, Finley can surprise people at times. Jim Ruckey, the second longest tenured coach in the track behind Ed Heinschel. Those kids always play tough, and it'll be interesting to see what happens. Fremont Ross has struggled early. Clay has struggled early, but that's really not that far out of the ordinary for those two teams to struggle in basketball with the track. So the top four are there, and the bottom four, and I don't mean that derogatorily,
right,
but, you know, the top half and the bottom half, I think that's the way it's going to end up. And it should be interesting. It's kind of interesting when you think about the three big leagues that we cover around here, the track, the Northern Lakes League, the TAC. You know, the coaches pick Cardinal Stritch in the TAC, and they're off to an amazing start. They pick Southview in the NLL. They're off to an amazing start. And they pick St. John's, and they're playing the way they're supposed to play. The thing with St. John's tonight, I believe tonight in their next game, they could be without Vince Williams, who injured his shoulder, I was told, out in San Diego in that tournament that St. John's played. So it's not confirmed yet, but for the people that I spoke to, it could be Vince might miss the next two games to take care of that shoulder, and hopefully it's nothing more than that. And he'll be able to get back on the floor in a couple of weeks.
Absolutely. We're talking with Bill Clark, voice of high school sports here in Toledo, Northwest Ohio, Southeast Michigan. A couple little things on some that you said. One, if I'm reading this right, Lima Senior is home tomorrow, but they had a solid Mansfield Senior team when they do. St. John's, and I was going to ask you about them, so let me just go ahead and do it. You mentioned the injury. They do get Clay at home tonight, but you also mentioned them earlier. They got the better of the Whitmer team that we'll have on the airwaves tonight. Talk to me about their season so far.
Well, St. John's is pretty much doing what they thought they would do. I mean, it's been Vince Williams and Houston King, the big two, and then Ed Heinschel has got some other people that are filling in roles, and that's what makes him so successful is he finds the kids to fill in around his quote-unquote superstars. And King and Williams have been that. I mean, they're both averaging mid-15 points and up. I mean, at one point, Vince was averaging almost 26 points a ball game. He didn't score a lot from the field in that Whitmer game because they kind of kept him from doing that, but I think he was 10 of 12, if memory serves me, from the free throw line, so he still was up around 15 points in that game, but they got some contributions from other people. Ryan Christie is now back full-time. He's still trying to find his way. The transfer from Central Catholic, he had to sit out the first five games, and you know, you got to practice with the team, but games situations and practice situations are totally different. And from what my people have told me that I've talked to, they said Ryan's struggling a little bit just to kind of find his way. He'll be fine. But, you know, when you come to a new school, first of all, you want to show your teammates that you belong there and that you deserve mm-hmm. some playing time. So there's a little bit of pressure I think Ryan could be putting on himself. But Moyer, the three-point shooter, he's doing very well. He's doing what he's supposed to do. So the role players are coming around. When St. John's went out to San Diego over the Christmas holidays, the first team they played had Shaquille O'Neal's son on that team. And Ed Heitzel told me, he's like 6'8", and he was a perimeter player. But St. John's, only lost by two. I mean, they played very well against that team, and they ended up being 2-2 in that tournament. So they got four big-time games out there. And so that's got to help. And St. John's does that a lot. They go to very tough tournaments over the Christmas holidays. I think Ed looks at that as preparations for the second season when the playoffs come around. But St. John's is doing pretty much what they were expected to do tonight. No disrespect to Clay, but St. John's, even without Vince Williams, should not have any trouble tonight to pick up another track with.
Talking with Bill Clark, Voice High School Sports here in Toledo, Northwest Ohio, Southeast Michigan. Whitmer Central Catholic will be the game that you'll hear Bill and the crew calling tonight. That'll be followed by the high school basketball scoreboard show. Let's go to the Northern Lakes League. You mentioned teams that were playing well and that were picked in preseason. One of them, Southview, but they're having to tangle with their cross-town rivals right there in Sylvania with Northview. Both of them off to outstanding starts. Southview is going to get Springfield on the and Napoleon on the road tonight. Northview gets Springfield, but talk to you about both Southview and Northview as they're already starting to feel like it's separating themselves from the rest of the pack in the NLL.
Yeah, that's pretty much the way to look at it, I think, Cush, is they are kind of separating themselves. Stan Joplin back on the bench, this time with Southview. He's doing a great job. Ryan Fries, his point guard, is doing very, very well. Wagenhauser, the big kid inside, is playing a little bit more up to his potential. He was hurt last year, so he didn't get much time at all last year. And Northview's kind of surprising people, but Jeremy McDonald is a really good coach. He's got those kids playing really well. And, I think Sylvania's kind of ruling the NLL right now. But Southview, according to the coaches, are the team to beat. We'll see them our first time Tuesday night on 106.5 when they travel over to Springfield to take on the Blue Devils. So I'm anxious to see Southview in action. But I think tonight both of those teams should have wins based on the way the schedule goes. Napoleon is struggling, and Northview's opponent shouldn't be a problem for the Wildcats either tonight.
Yeah, and that's Springfield for Northview. It's at Springfield, but you're right. Both of them right now struggling while Northview and Southview are playing well. Let's go over to the TAC, another team that you mentioned a few minutes ago, out to an outstanding start. Cardinal Stritch, they're right now at the top of the league. Fascinating game that they have tonight at home against Maumee Valley Country Day. That's technically, at least at this interim time period, a battle for the top of that league. And then right below that, another great matchup tonight, the rivalry of Ottawa Hills Toledo Christian, and all four of these teams playing each other tonight. Those are your top four teams in what is starting to really turn into a decent league.
Yeah, the TAC has been playing very well. I mean, Ottawa Hills, under John Lindsay, he does a great job pretty much every year. Toledo Christian and, as you mentioned, Ottawa Hills are tremendous rivals. But right now, the last couple of years, Jamie Kaczmarek has kind of helped Cardinal Stritch separate themselves from the pack a little bit. And they're starting, they're off to a great start this year as well. So, I see Cardinal Stritch, unless they stub their toe with something out of their control, it looks like they could make a deep run into the tournament. They got to the regionals the last 2 years, and Coach Kaczmarek has got these kids playing really well. They run it, they gun it, they play some defense, they got some really good shooters. So it should be pretty interesting tonight when Cardinal Stritch takes on Zeb Jackson and Maumee Valley. But again, Coach, we always talk about it. And with the three major leagues that we talk about, it's all in common from the standpoint that you get a home and home.
Mm-hmm.
So you like to defend your home court when you get it. But for the team that loses, you still got one more shot at that team again. So the leagues, all three of them are far from being over. But the ones at the top are looking to have a little more separation as we get going here in January.
And the one league we did not mention is will be my last question for you today. And thanks so much for the time, and we'll enjoy hearing your broadcast a little later. Whitmer Central Catholic, 7 o'clock, the coverage time for that one here on the Ticket, followed by the High School Basketball Scoreboard Show, is in the City League. Now, Start is off to a good start, pun intended, and they get Rogers tonight. and that game is at Start. Rodgers is struggling overall, but in City League play, they've done decently so far, and this is also a battle for first place, despite what the overall records are showing. But at the end of the day, the way it feels like here in the early going, is this Start's league to lose at this point?
Yeah, I think the way it's set up at this point, I would think it is. And Start has Rodgers at home, so we just talked about it a minute ago, how important it is to defend your home court. So I think Start will be able to do that. Rodgers, we saw them in the very early stages of the season against St. John's, and they were terrible. But they've improved each year under their first-year head coach, Catan. So it looks like it's going to be an interesting City League. Again, everybody beats each other up every Friday night. But tonight, I think Start takes another step toward solidifying themselves at the top of the City League at this point of the season.
There's so much basketball still left to be played, but it'll come at us real, real quick. And Bill will be there for the duration for all the calls of it, including tonight, Whitmer Central Catholic, followed by the High School Basketball Scoreboard Show. Bill, we always appreciate the time, always appreciate the insight. Have a good call tonight. We'll catch up with you next week.
Look forward to it. Thanks, Cush.
Bill Clark, voice of high school sports here in Toledo, Northwest Ohio, Southeast Michigan. Hey, that's going to do it. You hear the music playing. So that's going to do it for this edition of the Extravaganza. Enjoy the wild card weekend and then a national championship game, which we're going to talk a lot about when we reconvene on Monday. Stick around. I'm in one more day for Mike Miller on Drive Time. That's next here on The Ticket. See ya.